Good afternoon. Welcome to House Finance. Today is March 30th. It's about 2:05. For the record, members present so far are Representative Moses, Representative Holm, Representative Hawker, Representative Jewell, Vice Chair Stoltz, Co-Chair Meyer, and Co-Chair Chenault. This afternoon on the schedule, we have House Bill 488, Oil and Gas Production Taxes. And with us today, we'll have two presentations, one from Richard Owen. Good afternoon, Richard. From ExxonMobil, he is the Alaska Production Manager. After Richard's presentation, we'll move on to Conoco with Jim Bowles, Mary Ann, and Dr. David Bramley. So with that, Richard, the floor is yours, sir.
Thank you. Chairman, members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Richard Owen. I am production manager for ExxonMobil in Alaska, and I'm vice president of ExxonMobil Alaska Production. I'm here today to discuss ExxonMobil's concerns with the committee substitute to House Bill 488. And before I go into our specific concerns, I would like to take a few minutes to describe ExxonMobil's history in Alaska, how tax systems impact investments, and our assessment of the remaining resource potential on Alaska's North Slope. ExxonMobil has had a presence in Alaska for over half a century, investing more than $11 billion in the state's economy. Currently, ExxonMobil has working interests in Prudhoe Bay, Kuparuk, Endicott, and Granite Point. We are the operator of Point Thompson and are the largest interest holder in the Prudhoe Bay field. Our current working interest oil production is approximately 180,000 barrels a day, and we're the largest owner of discovered gas resource. We're proud of the role our company has played in Alaska through exploration, initial field developments, construction of taps, development of new technology, and the promotion of efficient reservoir management practices. Today, our production from Alaska represents approximately 4% of ExxonMobil's worldwide oil and gas production. Our Alaskan production is primarily from Prudhoe Bay and nearby satellite fields. Prudhoe Bay, along with Point Thompson, has significant remaining potential, but it comes at a higher cost and risk. One of ExxonMobil's objectives in both the gas pipeline fiscal contract negotiations and the discussions on oil taxes has been to reduce the risk associated with fiscal changes by working with the state of Alaska to establish a predictable and durable fiscal environment in which to make our long-term investment decisions. Changes in fiscal regime for oil directly impact how we view the stability of Alaska's fiscal environment, which in turn impacts how we evaluate ongoing investment decisions. Tax systems need to be carefully designed to ensure the desired objective of resource development is achieved. To that end, it is critical to take into account the quality of the remaining resource, otherwise a change may result in unintended consequences such as reduced investment and lower reserve recovery. Now, when I say the quality of the resource, I mean the size and the nature of the oil and gas reservoirs, the cost and technology required to develop those reservoirs, the distance to market, as well as the tax and royalty systems that applies, including the long-term stability of that system. Countries that are experiencing significant industry investment have achieved the proper balance in their fiscal regimes. ExxonMobil's assessment of the remaining oil resource suggests future growth opportunities will come from complex enhanced oil recovery projects, development of smaller, more marginal oil accumulations, and innovative development of viscous and heavy oil resources. These opportunities will require the development and application of new technology, higher unit development costs, and more complex operations to deliver a given production rate. These resources are much lower in quality as compared to Prudhoe Bay and Kuparuk, though they face similar challenges associated with Arctic conditions and the distance to market. Therefore, we're concerned with the administration's original proposal, which was weighted towards a higher tax, which could prevent some of Alaska's challenged resources from being developed. The committee substitute contains even higher tax rates, which may prevent more of these challenged resources from being developed. On February 28, I testified in the House Resource Committee about our key concerns with House Bill 488 as originally proposed. On March 18, I testified again before the House Resource Committee about how the proposed changes incorporated in the committee substitute bill exacerbate our concerns. And I don't intend to cover all of my previous testimony, but I will provide some comments in two key areas: the addition of the progressive tax rate and the elimination of the transition provisions. House Bill 488, as originally proposed, represented a significant tax increase on the industry. And as I just outlined, we're concerned that the higher tax rate could prevent some of Alaska's remaining challenged resource from being developed. The committee substitute bill increases the tax rate as oil prices increase. Too high a tax rate discourages investment. Companies are willing to accept the risks of long-term, capital-intensive investments when there is a corresponding opportunity for upside potential through a variety of factors such as increased production or higher prices. And when you limit or reduce the benefit that companies can achieve from the upside factors, you reduce the attractiveness of those investment opportunities. The proposal to increase the already high base tax rate as oil prices increase reduces or limits the upside potential, which will result in companies recalibrating investment decisions. Reduced investments will result in reduced resource recovery, diminished state revenues, and fewer employment opportunities, with the resultant negative impact on the state's economy. And let me re-emphasize this point. While higher taxes may bring additional revenues in the short term, any reduction in investment and subsequent production will significantly impact those revenues in the longer term. We think that the focus of the tax bill should be about encouraging investment and growing production. Now, I'd like to discuss the committee's substitutes elimination of the transition provisions. The benefits from a typical oil and gas investment take many years to be realized. Satellite and tertiary recovery investment decisions by our company during the last 5 years were made under the ELF structure, anticipating a lower tax relative to that proposed under the PPT bill. The state appropriately provided this incentive so that these challenged and costly projects could be made commercially viable. House Bill 488, as originally proposed, recognized that it's not appropriate to suddenly increase taxes on these investments without providing some form of consideration. The transition provisions in House Bill 488, as originally proposed, contained a 5-year transition period into the higher tax PPT system. This represented a reasonable transition by mitigating the increased tax treatment to which these projects will now be subjected. To avoid penalizing these recent investments, the transition provisions included in the bill are essential. The committee substitute bill eliminates these transition provisions and fails to adequately address the significant increase in tax burden these past investments will now have to bear. Removal of the transition provisions would decrease investor confidence. Despite our concerns with House Bill 488 as originally proposed, we're prepared to move forward under that system, and I repeat, as originally proposed, since it sought to provide a balance of the revenues to the state and producers across a range of oil prices. It provided sufficient incentive for producers to undertake exploration and development risks, and it included reasonable transition provisions for past investments. And most importantly for ExxonMobil, oil fiscal contract terms consistent with the administration's proposal would provide the predictability and durability necessary to advance the gas project to the next phase. Now, let me reiterate that the quality of the resources, the risks undertaken by a producer, and the impact on the state's overall investment climate must be factored into the design of the tax system. While industry needs predictability and durability under which to gauge investment decisions, the attractiveness of that predictability and durability is lost if it comes at too high a cost. As I mentioned earlier, the committee's proposed substitute exacerbates the key concerns regarding both tax rates and transition provisions, and we urge the committee to support House Bill 488 as it was originally proposed. I thank you very much, Chairman and committee members, and I'm happy to address any questions.
And thank you, Richard. For the record, Representative Foster, Representative Kelly, Representative Wyrock have joined us. Are there any questions? Representative Hawker.
Mr. Chairman, Richard, your concluding comments there, I believe you said, you know, you as a company, were willing to move forward under the original 488. Then you clarified that and made some references to, which lead me to believe you're referring to moving forward with the gas line contract negotiations. Is that an implication that if we passed something other than, let's just say if we passed out of this committee, ultimately the exact version that came out of resources, does that mean that you'd withdraw from gas line negotiations?
Representative Walker, through the chair. That's not what it means. It means that we had a lot of time to understand and study the proposal that Mr. Galpin made. And we, having done that, became comfortable as a company that that would provide, if we got contract terms consistent with that, the right environment and predictability and durability that we would require to be able to move forward with the gas pipeline to the next phase. When we change that bill, it has a lot of implications, and we need to spend time to understand those. And so we've been trying to do that and keep up with some of the changes that have been taken place through these committee substitutes. The bottom line is we don't know. All we know is that as increase in taxes happens, it undermines the health of the oil industry. And the oil business does underpin the gas business, and we need a healthy oil business on which to build gas.
Thank you. Okay. Representative Holm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Owen, in part of your presentation today, you talked about transition provision, and you felt that it was inappropriate to have those removed because your investments were predicated on earlier methodologies. And I'm curious, the transition provisions that were originally in 488, were based upon what price of oil?
Representative Palmer, through the chair, they weren't based on any price for oil. They were based on investments that were made in which we expected to get a revenue stream from those investments. We had a tax structure that was in place. And this PPT legislation, this bill, suddenly changes that tax structure. So we're now going from one system to another system, and it's independent of price. And those investment decisions may have been made under a certain price forecast, and you might argue that the current prices today are higher than that forecast. But the revenue streams from investments are long. They take a long time. Some of the projects that we're investing in actually take many years before they actually start to return. Some of the oil that we may expect to get from enhanced recovery project hasn't come yet. It's going to come in a few years' time. Perhaps the price of oil will be $30 a barrel, and we'll be paying a higher tax. We don't know. All we know is that there's been a sudden change, or there will be a sudden change in the tax that is those projects are subject to. The transition provisions seek to provide some way of transitioning from a one tax regime to another tax regime.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could I follow up with one other question? One that I think, as all Alaskans, would like to have an answer from Exxon. And that is, as we go through these negotiations, and you and I discussed this before, how would you respond to the idea that the people of Alaska have waited 17 years to have a resolution of a court case which we theoretically won 17 years ago about the Exxon Valdez? And how does that play into the investor confidence versus the state of Alaska confidence in doing business with Exxon?
Representative Holm, through the chair, I'm not here today to discuss the Exxon Valdez oil spill case. I'm here today to discuss the PPT bill and legislation and the future for oil and gas development in the state.
Representative Jewell. Well, for the record, Representative Katrina has also joined us. Representative Jewell.
Other areas that are seeing development and had changes in their tax regime. Have they, has there been a transition period, a transition phase, a transition clause such as this in other parts of the world?
Representative Jewell, through the chair, we have done some research in that, and we have five different examples where transition provisions have been made available when the system's changed, and we can make those cases available to the committee members.
That would be good. As we, in prior testimony, heard that this was kind of a unique provision.
Thank you. Representative Kelly.
Yes, thank you for coming before us today. On the transition question, as you know, the other body is looking at a method of clawback that would compel investment. Does that work for you?
Representative Kelly, through the chair, I'm not familiar with what a clawback is, but if we're talking about the transition payments, transition arrangements, it may, and it's very, very difficult to get a very clear read on exactly how those work. And so as the thinking develops, we'll look at what those are. I was asked that question in the other house or the other body, and I would say that what that scheme was tying these transitions to future spend. And I made the point in Senate Resources that these transition arrangements are about investments that have already been made, where we have committed the dollars, that we either are starting to see or yet to see or will see a revenue stream. It is not a surrogate for an investment incentive. It's a way of compensating from the change of one tax system to a new tax system. And so while some other ways of how those payments might be made over time may work, we think that the original bill, which simply made the transition based on calendar years with some other provisions, was an effective transition mechanism.
Thank you, Mr. Representative Krutula. Well, Representative Stoltz.
Mr. Chairman, you know, I haven't asked any questions yet, but that Representative Holmes' question, it kind of dead-ended there, but it kind of reminded me of when I was watching the congressional hearings on steroid. Mark McGuire just wasn't going to talk about anything in the past. That was his response, and that's sort of how is that how I should interpret your response to that, or is there going to be addressed at another time?
Representative Stoltz, through the chair. I mean, we don't see it necessarily. I mean, some of the events are in the past and some of them are in the present. This just isn't the right forum to discuss them. So
another forum around this building at a later time.
Perhaps. I mean,
thank you. Any other questions from committee members? Richard, just out of curiosity, could you give me a timeline on when negotiations started on PPT with the administration?
Representative Chenault, I would say that we right from the beginning of our discussions around a fiscal contract have made it clear both to the state and publicly that what we see as necessary for a gas pipeline to move forward is predictability, durability around both oil and gas terms. So to a large extent, right from the beginning of the gas fiscal negotiations, we started talking to the state about trying to provide stability around oil terms. And clearly when we started out on this process, we were looking for stability and durability and predictability, and our starting point was, well, with the system we have. And over time, it's become clear, I guess, that the system that we have, there's a strong desire to change from the old structure.
And would you say that over time that Alaska has been a fairly stable environment to work in?
I don't have enough personal history with the entire industry. I would say that in general, I think that while during the period that that Elf was there, there was a long period of relative stability around oil taxes. Having said that, I guess probably nearly every year there was some move to whether or question whether they should be changed. And I think it's important for the legislature to realize that just the actual it's not always just change, where change actually happens through legislation that creates impacts how you see the stability of the environment you're investing in. Even the continual floating of proposals or whether things should change creates a certain air of instability and whether you can expect change in the future. And I think the last few years we've kind of been in that mode where people have been saying, well, something should change, and their question is, well, when's it going to change? And that does create some uncertainty around the investment environment.
Well, and I'll agree there, and not being involved in issues around the world, I would almost think that you probably have somewhat similar conversations going on in other foreign countries that you're probably working in. But, over time, at least in my short time down here, which is 6 years, that question comes up every year about stability. And while there may be talk going on about that particular issue, I would say that the state of Alaska has been, up until something that was passed last year, pretty stable in how we've treated the oil industry over time. And so I just want to put that on the record that I think that we have been fairly stable. Right. I haven't seen... And don't take this as an insult to anybody in the industry, but I haven't seen any platform, I haven't seen any oil rig that's been burned, blown up, or had hostages taken. But we continue to work around the world, and you come to a state like Alaska, and we talk about stability, and that's just one aspect of stability. But you talk about not having a stable environment, and I've heard this, like I say, for the 6 years I've been down here, and I concern myself that some of the corporations are making huge investments across the world in a lot more unstable areas than what we're in, as far as stability.
Representative Chenault, if I could make a couple of comments, I would agree that I think that and the comments that we make as ExxonMobil around the need for stability and predictability and durability are not so much reflective of it being unstable now. They're more reflective of what are we trying to do, and we're talking about making billions of dollars investment over the next 10 years, which will require a payout over the next 50 years, and it's looking forward. When we look forward, that's what we're really talking about, the need for stability and durability and predictability. It's not trying to reflect way on the actions of the legislature in any way.
I take your point. Hindsight's always 2020, and I would say that if, we like to think that whenever we put in a tax regime that it is going to be from now forward.
Right.
And that's how we would like to always look at it, too, from now forward. But there's occasionally you have to look at from now and what happened. And I would say 15 years ago, if you could have seen into the future that Alaska was as stable as it was, even though there might have been some little jerks, that maybe the investment would have been more. Okay. Representative Kurtula.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to reiterate the emotion that I think we're probably all feeling, which is that I'm deeply disappointed in your company and in its behavior toward the citizens of Alaska with the Exxon Valdez and its lack of settlement, especially to the fishermen of Prince William Sound. But having said that, in terms of stability, my question is, with the structure of our current system, know that we all find fault with it, and I certainly do, in these years of high prices. But if we could go back to that structure and, keep with us the years of litigation and the years of determinations, rather than making the wholesale shift we are, Would that provide more stability and give us back a known playing field and possibly start talking about the changes to that system rather than going wholesale into something new? Would that provide your company more of the type of stability that I think you're talking about?
Representative Catula, through the chair, I mean, there are different tax structures that can be put in place. I think that the administration and the consultants for the administration have testified that they see some structural issues associated with the existing system, design issues associated with how it's designed, and have therefore recommended this change. And I guess most of our comments have been not so much looking at all of the alternatives, but have been talking about how we feel about the proposal that the administration made and then commenting on other proposals. There are many different systems that can be put in place and many different systems around the world. Having looked at and examined the proposal that the administration made, we think that that system as it was proposed can work in Alaska and is an appropriate system for Alaska.
Follow up. Even with the lack of definition in the legislation and the fact that so much is going to have to be left up to regulation, I'd just like you to think about that, and if you feel that there aren't things that should be much better defined for both sides. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick question. I'm interested in the heavy oil up on the North Slope, the known accumulations, Wessac, Agnew, and Orion, I guess, and there's probably some others. In your mind, how best do we go after that oil? Is it by keeping the tax rate down, or is it by raising the credit portion?
I represent Meyer. I think that we see that both of those are important, but ultimately the tax rate is one of the most important aspects of this because it talks about the tax credit is a way of reducing the barrier to investment. It's a way of the entry cost. But the prize that we're trying to get is the revenue stream for that investment. And the tax rate impacts that revenue stream for its entire life. And the credit rate just removes a barrier or eases the investment. So they need to be balanced ultimately. But ultimately, the tax rate is determining the total size of that pie, of what's the benefit of an overall project. The investment credit has the ability to impact the rate of return because it reduces some of that upfront investment. But ultimately, we're looking at what's the total size of the prize, what's the total resource in the ground, what's the total revenue we can get from it.
Okay, if I could follow up a little bit on this. Couple questions. Yesterday, we asked, the comment came up yesterday that in the House Resources Bill, they're using WTI instead of Alaska North Slope as their benchmark, and the argument was that the three majors could manipulate the ANS. What's your feelings on that, and would you rather use the WTI as our benchmark, or would you rather see Alaska North Slope as the ANS as the benchmark?
I guess there's two parts to that question. Clearly, WTI is a different crude mix to Alaska North Slope, and therefore it's not the same crude, and it's not necessarily representative of Alaska North Slope crude. So it would seem more appropriate to, if you're talking about a tax, then to make the tax based on whatever the marker is that you're trying to actually tax. On the second question, I guess the market is all driven by sales contracts that are based on price. We don't discuss price with any of our competitors in current terms price, nor do we discuss with any of our competitors our price outlooks. I'd also say that the West Coast market is a market into refineries, and there's quite a wide range of refineries that market's being, that crude's being sold into. It's a real market. So I don't believe that there's any manipulation or ability to manipulate that market. And just for an example, the refineries on the West Coast that are taking ANS crude, Tesoro, Shell, Valero, Chevron, Williams, are all refineries that have got nothing to do with BP, ExxonMobil, and ConocoPhillips.
Okay, very good. And if I may, one more, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Meyer.
We heard, Richard, we heard yesterday, too, BP's strategy in Alaska is to, rather than do exploration, I think they said that they haven't had the best luck. In fact, I think Steve said that he was one of the ones that worked on the infamous Muckluck well that was dry and very expensive. So their strategy is to try to get more out of existing known fields, primarily Prudhoe and Kuparuk. And we're going to hear from ConocoPhillips next. I believe their strategy, I don't want to put words in their mouth, will be to try to do both, to get more out of the existing fields. And
we see that one of the watershed events that will happen in terms of exploration will be a gas line moving forward, because I think that will change that mix. But at the moment, our primary focus is on development of the known resources and working very hard to try and get a gas pipeline progressed, which will also enable us to develop Point Thompson.
Okay, very good. So you're saying that once the gas pipeline is approved and construction started, that Exxon's strategy then may be to do more exploration, but more in the gas line than oil?